Blog Talk Radio.
And Dirty with Scout Smith and Stacy Hopkins in the house.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well today. Went and did a little canvassing yesterday for Park Cannon. You know, there's a runoff going over there.
It was
great. You know, they have a pretty tight ship there running over there. I was thoroughly impressed with some things. I actually, you know, some things I want to ask their field director because some things I seen that was done a little differently that I liked. So I'm going to, you know, sit down. I want to sit down and talk to them and kind of, you know, see if we can exchange some information. It was very interesting because she has a lot of support out in the community. A lot of people are, you know, are ready for her to win. It's going to be I think February 16th is going to be a very interesting day. And I did not realize that if she gets elected, she'll be the youngest legislator that we have in the General Assembly at the age of 24.
Oh. I did not know that.
I did not either. You know, we can make some history here in Georgia. So
it all depends on turnout. I mean, that's what runoffs do. He or she who gets their person to the poll wins. So if you are living in that district, House District 58, get back out there. I know you get tired of being told, you know, come back out and vote. But unfortunately, this is how it works right now. So you know, just a moment of your time. You know, when it's a runoff like this, you're in and out in no time. So it's not like you're standing at the polls for hours.
Well, the group that I was with yesterday was a group of friends of mine, and we, you know, all kind of been trying to help out the Cannon campaign. However, so when our group got finished, you know, we decided to go. You know, yesterday was a very nice day.
Mm-hmm.
So we went over to one of the parks in the area and grilled out. We took some hot dogs and hamburgers. So we was, you know, I think that, you know, in a canvas program, that's kind of the thing that you want to do because then people are more apt to want to come out and canvas, particularly if they're volunteers, if there's something fun that's going to happen.
It's coalition building.
Yeah, go out and have some fun. So we out and had some hamburgers and hot dogs, you know. As the old church folks say, we went out and fellowshipped. We went no religious fellowship, I promise you that. But we went out and time together and, you know, and had a good time and kind of, you know, talked a little politics and, you know, and talked about the communities that we had walked because it's been a long time since I done actually walked streets in on the west side. You know, I hadn't really probably walked in Fulton County outside of downtown since I was a teenager, and particularly in the area that they was in was the area that when I was a small child, before my parents moved to DeKalb County, that was the area we lived in between Camelton and Cascade, that area over there. Matter of fact, we canvassed the street that I was born on yesterday, and I was like, "Honey, Sucker Lane, why is this? You know, why is this in my head?" And I said, "Dang it, this is the street that's on my birth certificate."
See? You came home yesterday. You came on home.
Let
me ask you a question. Was it, you know, because as one who lives on the South Side, you know, we often hear a lot about how it's, you know, oh, it's, you know, you'd make it, to hear some people tell it, you think it's the wild, wild west over here. We got issues, but it's not that damn bad, is it?
Actually, you know, I wish we had some of the elements that I seen yesterday just in the community, I wish we had on the east side. Because you have people, particularly on a warm day on the west side, and I've always known this, noticed this, that people are out and about and doing whatever. So, we got plenty of people, you know, out and about in the community. They were walking around, just people out. On the east side, we all cooped up in our cars. We don't walk. We don't have sidewalks. There's no connection to the communities. There's no sense of community on the east side, because everything is built around us moving cars.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean,
interesting. I find that interesting because you know I always hear, oh, you live on the south side. You live off now I'm off of Old National. You're off of Old National. You know, you make it. I mean, you would think it was nothing but pimps and hoes and shootings and dope being sold, and it's really not.
And when you look at people who live on our side of town, I guess because we are isolated from each other, and it's kind of sad because we are isolated from each other because we're spending so much time in cars. And even when we last, you know, just speaking to community, you know, we decided, you know, I went out with some friends last night, and we was talking about how on the east side there's no nightlife. You know what I'm saying? You nothing for us. You know, we live out here. We, you know, you would think because we haven't talked about this on the show before about how we have the demographics for certain things. We have the income for certain things, but certain amenities just don't exist.
Either that or folks keep going to other communities. You know, people keep going to Virginia Highlands and Midtown and you know, what do they call it, West Midtown now. That always makes me laugh. But, we tend to go elsewhere for it.
Right, and one of the reasons I think that's the case is because our communities are not on the east side are not walkable. We suffer from so many different things, like transportation issues, because, you know, MARTA, the closer you get to the center of the city, MARTA is very dense, and it's, you know, overlapping routes, bus stations being close to another, you know, bus stops being close to one another, train stations being close. It's so convenient that you can do stuff and don't feel like you're taking all day to do it. Whereas when we built out this way, you know, we got large tracts of unused land, and we talk about developing it, but when we do develop it, we don't make it walkable. Why would you want to go shopping somewhere that you have to go hop in your car back and forth, back and forth, back and forth to go shopping when you could go somewhere, park your car, go shopping, and you can just walk around all day and don't have to spend the gas? I promise you we spend probably more time OTP in our cars than folks ITP do.
Mm-hmm.
But we shouldn't have to. I mean, it just comes down to some of the things we probably need to make important from our government point of view that, again, talking about the community in Southwest Atlanta and, you know, and just Atlanta in general, I mean, there's some things that needs to be done. Even though there's certain amenities, there's certain things that need to be done, such as urban blight. It's walkable, and, yes, you don't have large tracts of empty land, but there was a lot of empty houses boarded up and apartment complexes, whole apartment complexes that are boarded up.
Bad.
And we have a homeless problem. And we have a homeless problem in Atlanta. So I'm like, really? We have a housing crisis and there's all this empty residential space? I mean, there's a lot of issues that could be that you know, need to be addressed locally. I mean,
to hear elected officials tell it, there is no affordable housing crisis in Metro Atlanta. You know, I've had a conversation with quite a few of them, and when you say affordable, particularly, you know, where I used to live off of Cleveland Avenue, you know, and I thought the bus station had moved back to Hayville because you would see all these people walking with the, you know, rolling suitcases. they're going from shelter to shelter or just looking for somewhere to stay during the day because they're kicked out of the shelter.
Yeah, you know how, and I would love a study for somebody to tell me how many people we have living in Atlanta in hotels and extended stays.
There was a study just recently done to try to count them, and, you know, you're not going to get every single one of them, but it's quite a few. I mean, we have, my daughter goes to Tri-Cities High School, and there are kids who, you know, I'm not trying to put anybody on blast, but there are a lot of kids in these schools that when they leave school, they sleep in their cars. You know, I don't think people understand the impact of the housing crisis, particularly on Southside neighborhoods. We have created a whole new class of migrant citizens. You know, you got people who are just out there, and they're making it look, you know, they look like they're doing it on the surface level, but when you scratch beneath the surface, there's a lot of craziness going on, and some of that bubbled up today with the Opportunity School District thing. We got to talk about that.
We need to do is, you know, we got to, you know, for everybody that's, you know, wondering what, you know, particularly since our show is African-American driven, you know, we're going to be doing Black History Month here on Down South and Dirty, but it's not going to be your typical Black History Month. We're not going to be going through Harriet Tubman and Martin Luther King. We're going to talk about our history and our future from some ways that y'all ain't never thought about it before. And a lot of these subjects we're talking about right now are very integral to that history that we have. So
we're not going to talk about George Washington carving peanuts.
Yeah, we're not going to do all that. I think we got that packed down. I really do think we got that packed down. I mean, that's, you know, that's when my children do Black history projects, that stuff automatically comes regurgitating out their mouths because I think it's almost genetic now that you don't even have to do research. You just, you was born with that knowledge. We need to put some new stuff out there. I mean, so I love George Washington Carver. I enjoy some peanut butter. I mean, I remember in elementary school, Black History Month, we actually learned how to make peanut butter from fresh peanuts.
Yep.
History Month. That used to be the thing. So, I mean, yeah, I'm good. But you can't do that in school now because kids have peanut allergies.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
you can't do that.
Don't even go there.
Yeah, you got peanut allergies, so you can't be fooling around like that no more. So, but, you know, we got an interesting show coming up today, and everybody who politically in the know knows tomorrow is Iowa Caucus Day. And our show is called The Greatest Show on Earth, Under the Tent. You know, we're doing a pre-show today on the Iowa caucuses. So you know how we do it around here. We're gonna do a little bit of show and tell and talk about how the caucus system works and kind of go through what the polls are saying. And, you know, we're going to have a Noah Changa coming on here in a little bit doing our Bernie treatment. We have a special guest, a fellow radio host. Benjamin Dixon is going to be coming on, and we're gonna chop it up with him. So we got a good show coming on, and also, you know, we open up our phone at 2:30. Everybody, limit your remarks to 2 minutes, and the number is 657-383-0995. So, you know, call in. Let's get it ready. You know, and let's chop it up and let's talk about.
Yeah, I mean, this show, people are getting interested into how things work. And one of the beauties of the Bernie campaign is that people are actually talking about things as to how to run as a delegate and, you know, the Iowa caucus. On a side note, yesterday, the Bernie campaign in Atlanta, they did a training session on caucusing. I was invited to go. I couldn't get there because, hint to anybody going downtown and talking in the MARTA, man, cash is not a wanted thing down there, and take MARTA, really. The parking is crazy. I drove around trying to find a place to park, and I finally bugged out. But, you know, people are talking about the processes and you know, getting involved in how political sausage is made. So that's always a really good thing to see and why we wanted to do this show. Caucusing and also running for delegates, it kind of runs along the same vein. So we wanted to get people, you know, interested in doing it. It's not for everybody, but if you can, please do. The caucuses start tomorrow at 6:30 in Iowa, and it's an interesting process. Maybe the next cycle we can get to go and actually be there on the ground and see how it goes. I would have really loved to have gone this year, but I just couldn't make it. So we're hoping to kind of take some of the mystique out of it, and 'cause it's really not that complicated. It's just that people just don't know what the process is. It's kind of interesting. This is like, you know, small d democracy, and it's really kind of fascinating to watch if you're a geek or, you know, just want to know how things work a little better. While we're waiting for a Noah to come on, I did watch the GOP debates the other day because, you know, you got to know what the other side is talking. It was fascinating. I liked it so much better without Donald Trump. And it was interesting to hear the different factions that are within the party. Even though I don't agree with most of what they said, one of the things I took away is that if you took one thing, there was at least one thing that each candidate said that was a place for us to find consensus. If you had taken one thing from each of those candidates and formed a bill, it would pass. So, Democrats and progressives need to kind of, I would encourage them to listen. You know, your head will explode when you see the Donald Trump kind of ones because, you know, it really was unfair to other candidates. I think Donald Trump, he kind of messed up by pulling out. But he did the rest of the candidates a favor. It gave them a chance to, you know, kind of make their last push before Iowa. And you heard some things that, you know, were definitely familiar. You know, you had the, the anti-abortion wing of it, which Christie kind of embraced when he was asked a question about, you know, and it was kind of weird because it was about fiscal matters. And he was like, well, you know, can one put the price over saving an unborn child? And the House went wild, you know. There were some things to expect and some things, you know, you just go, no. But it was kind of fascinating to hear some of their views. Rand Paul on, mass incarceration and criminal justice reform. Kasich stands out as one of the ones that probably could best, you know, work across both aisles. He seems a little too nice, you know, for the red base, red meat eating part of the base. Bush got to show a little bit of his stuff out there, so it was kind of interesting. It was really kind of interesting.
Two calls. I think one of them might be Noah. Let me check and see.
Okay.
Hello. How are
you
guys?
Doing?
It's Noah. I'm good.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm doing good. So it's been a crazy week, as
it
usual.
It is another crazy week. I just feel like, you know, I got the torch handed to me, and it's just like, yeah, we're going to break you in. I mean, like, the social media universe is really trying to test, they're trying my life right now, as the kids would say. So much has happened. Earlier in the week, there was a really huge event in Minnesota. I believe it was 20,000 people between the main venue and the overflow, is the estimate I saw, showed up in cold Minnesota, you know, to hear Bernie speak. Also, there was a bunch of buzz on social media, and I never actually saw anything like in a serious article or anything else out of it, so who really knows what actually ultimately. And I know Mr. Dixon's going to come on right after me, so I'm going to try and be as brief as possible and stay on time. But anyway, there was a incident with some young black activists in the campaign over whether or not they would be permitted. Because usually at these events, if you've never been to one of these big rallies, the campaign will the volunteers will go through the lines when people are waiting in lines, and they will give people armbands to be able to go on stage. So, you know, you see all the great pictures of all the different people standing behind burning on stage. Those people get hand-selected, you know, earlier on in the evening to do that. From all the different accounts that I've been able to piece together, these young women were tipped off as possible disruptors. Now, they immediately took to social media alleging racial profiling and the campaign was racist, and just because they were black, they were called out. Well, there's other, you know, evidence on Twitter and stuff that they had planned a disruption. They have disrupted other, you know, local-level candidates at least before. And, I mean, quite honestly, it's a safety issue. You can't really have that type of stuff happening. I've worked two of those larger events, nowhere near that big. But you have to, if someone's going to act up on stage, one of the things we have experienced of 20,000 people who brave the cold, you know, to come out there. So it never, I don't really know what ultimately happened, because honestly, Twitter is driving me nuts right now, so I had to stop paying attention, because ultimately, you know, their story was, and you can see the video, because if you watch live streams of the event, you can see them. They weren't allowed on stage, but they were kind of like in the overflow standing area in front of the stage, and they're shouting over Bernie, you know, the whole time. And I think actually they have a very interesting issue they were trying to raise. It had to do with the issue of customs and deportations and immigration enforcement, and specifically black immigrant families, which is something that, you know, their group was saying was left out of, you know, Bernie's explicit platforms, which is possibly so, right? Because no one can absolutely touch every single point. But it was just interesting to see how this played out on Twitter, because all the different little black pundits, everyone who has a Jones out for Bernie, jumped all over. See, we told you they were racist. And maybe the candidate, maybe the campaign, maybe staffers who had to deal with this in the moment didn't handle this the best way. I really don't know, because I wasn't there. I can only see the clips and pieces and stuff like that, you know, but at the same time, we're too quick, you know, especially on social media. There are all these people who have all these great, they have these huge followings, and they're so quick to throw out these accusations or just share, you know, unsupported, undocumented information from people. And they have these huge followings that other people gravitate on it. You know what I'm saying? Even if they themselves know that there are two sides to every story, other people look to them for information. It's very socially irresponsible in many ways. So that was like kind of the big hubbub at the beginning of the week. And of course, you know, the flames were fanned because the quote unquote Bernie Bozo, some of them. You know, some of y'all out there in social media land, I know you think you mean well. I know you're trying to rep your candidate, but you do all of us in this movement a big disservice, and you need to work on how you talk to people of color. And as a black woman, I would say black women in particular, y'all make things very difficult for us, and it just made things even worse. What could have probably been, you know, squash real simply, or some people flared up on Twitter and Facebook kind of crazy, similar to last week's, you know, reparations discussions. And it's just like, look, we all can't keep saying that we're a part of this progressive movement, and there's all this intolerance that happens in terms of people's tone. And no, they're not the candidate, and the candidate should not necessarily be judged by their supporters, but at the same time, as a supporter, you're also an ambassador of the message that you're supposedly trying to share with other people. So we got to be mindful of that. And there's a lot of it going on, and I'm tired of excuse. I'm not going to make excuses for any of you. You really should watch your tone when you talk to people, even if you have a valid point. And some of the other groups and some, you know, the various Facebook pages and groups and stuff that I help manage, you know, people have said things to kind of trying to assuage, because there's all this talk still. You know, tomorrow is Iowa game time. We are here, prime time. And it's still all this discussion about the black vote and making sure, like, you know, what can we do to get the black vote? I get people in my inbox. What can we do? How can I, as a white person, talk to black people? Okay, you open your mouth and words come out, and hopefully, you know, you choose them carefully and you talk like you're talking to a person. I don't really know what magical, you know, messaging people are looking for. I do agree that people need help sometimes with their verbiage. But, you know, some of the commentary and stuff has been like, well, Bernie is our white MLK. Please, stay away from comparisons like that. He does not identify as a black man. Just because he's able to recognize the struggle and the disparities based on race and economics does not mean that he's one of us. Like please, don't make that, please stop.
No,
so Facebook and Twitter was very wild this week. But on a more local level, Georgia had burn storms this weekend. You know, pages
yes,
and whatever.
Yes, and I met one.
Did
I
you?
Met a gentleman who was at Stars and Stripes yesterday.
Stars and Stripes was supposed to be the smaller venue. I heard it had like 50 to 75 more people than the main event, what they thought the main event was going to be in Atlanta on Friday night. Granted, it was a Friday night in Atlanta. But it was very – we went on Friday night, me and my daughter, and it was a very good turnout. And I just suggest everyone go look at the Bernie map. There are – like, I think between the two events, there's, like, 60 phone banks that are getting ready to go up approximately. I think it's the estimate. There's, like, 60 phone banks or so that you're going to go up all around the metro area. If you are listening from someplace else, there's an office in Savannah. I believe it's opening next week. And there's just a
they're
huge
still looking
for
space in Macon, right?
They're still looking for space in Macon, Athens. The plan, she didn't necessarily give the LaDawn spoke to us, spoke a bit. She did not give the exact, like, order of offices, but I know Savannah is next. She is looking for a space in Macon. They are thinking Athens, Columbus are the three after Savannah. I don't know the order specifically. But there's, like, so much going on. There were some really great endorsements this week. I'm trying to wrap it up. There's some really great endorsements this week. And one of the things that stuck out for me, Erica Garner, daughter of Eric Garner.
Yes.
She came out. Sister won. If you're a Twitter person, go check her out on Twitter. It's ES_Snipes, SNIPES. She's awesome. She has been thumping for Bernie for a little while now on her Twitter account. And it's fascinating how people gravitated because her grandmother endorsed Hillary Clinton about a week or two ago. And she came out. It's a very well thought out piece that it's an op-ed that was in the Washington Post this week. Awesome. But one of her tweets this week really, really hit home for me because it's something we've talked, Stacey and I have talked about in particular, and Scout as well, that these black intellectuals will kind of presume to speak for all of us as if they're the only ones that can discuss issues of race and politics, but shuns a everyday, quote-unquote, average person like Erica as if she does not have the requisite mental capacity to actually rationalize and work through these issues. And one of the things she commented on was like, you know, I got people telling me that my rationale is basic or simplistic. I was just looking at it, I was like, who would come out that this woman who has experienced what she has experienced, her family would go through, no one said anything with her grandmother, and we can pick apart her grandmother's endorsement if we wanted to, but you know what, I respect people's right to say what they feel and what they're going to do. No one questioned, you know, whether or not Hillary Clinton was actually the candidate when the grandmother's talking about, you know, being in the projects and poor people in New York and things of that nature. No one, we don't have these black intellectuals picking all that stuff apart like that in real detail. I know Mr. Dixon has talked about that a lot on his show the past 2 weeks. But we do, when we have Erica, who has been someone who has, this is not the first op-ed that she's had that's been published by Washington Post, by the way. She is very, she communicates herself very, very clearly. It's awesome. And it speaks to just everyday issues that we as mothers, as working people, as brothers, as sisters, as whoever, as the brother on the block can relate to. And so for this one class to kind of shun that, I mean, I thought that was kind of like a diss to her and the movement everybody supposedly supports. So it was just really interesting with that. And then the other endorsement this week was one of the attorneys for the Trayvon Martin's family. She came out, very, very good piece as well, talking about why she was supporting Senator Sanders as well. So there's some, and I think there was another South Carolina endorsement as well this week. I mean, the weeks are starting to blend together because so much is happening. But everyone, stay involved. You know, yesterday, not the hashtag, not me, us, that came from the campaign, that was trending at number one yesterday. And the whole purpose of yesterday's hashtag was this movement from the very beginning. Bernie has consistently said the same thing. It is not about him. My favorite line from the Birmingham meetup was, it's not Bernie, Bernie, Bernie. It's you, you, you. It's we the people. And that is running the course. When everyone says that he's pie in the sky or he can't do this or whatever case may be, no, right, he can't. He's not magical. He's not going to wave a magic wand to make it all better. But if we get off our collective bottoms and vote and be engaged and really hold the people who hold positions of authority that we entrust to them, if we hold them accountable, then yes, we can make campaign finance reform a reality. We can make single-payer health care. Don't let nobody tell you otherwise. Read and listen and learn for yourself. So I thank you guys. I'm going to wrap it up. Please pay attention. There's so much going on online. Look on map.berniesanders.com because the campaign, the staff is active and in full force. They're active and engaging with people who've been doing stuff grassroots locally to try and get input from people about different events and what is working. There are different positions available. I think LaDawn explained that they're doing, they're doing district, so based on the House districts, they're looking for people to be House district leaders, volunteers to do phone making, canvassing, and stuff like that too. So get involved if you can, or at least keep up through. There's so much. Facebook, for right now, Facebook, I'm about to go on a Twitter sabbatical because Twitter's bad for my blood pressure, and Facebook is a little bit more manageable. Check out African Americans for Bernie, the group and the page, People of Color for Bernie, Atlanta for Bernie, Georgia for Bernie, Georgia Women for Bernie, 2016. There's just so much going on. Definitely go check out the Down South and Dirty Facebook page. Give us a like. You know, we just got
okay.
to
hang
information.
On. I think we got a Twitter handle.
I'm turning it over to you guys.
So, Stacey, what's the new Twitter handle now?
It's
Twitter handle.
It's at DSD Radio, and you can find us on Twitter. You can also find us on Facebook at Down South and Dirty. Noah, can you hang on? Because we both have Benjamin Dixon on, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that whole brouhaha, because it's kind of been radio silence. You know, and you and I have talked because we saw some of the y'all comments on some of these articles are out of pocket and unhinged, and we see it, you know, and it really was disturbing. You know, you can't do issues of this nature like an ostrich. We need to talk about it, and it was kind of crazy. So, you know, and Benjamin has been. He's been one of the few of the Twitter army going ham, pushing back on the reparations, because, you know, we're still talking about it. And, you know, since the conversation got brought up, you know, let's chop it up.
Scout too. What Scout said, I'm not here, you know, I'm just here for the revolution. And honestly, people need to clarify for themselves what political revolution is, what we're talking about, and what really is going to be required of us to really bring the change. You know, a lot of people have expressed discontent with the Obama administration because hope and change, and they feel like, you know, and I will get on people. I'm not going to let you dog Obama. You might not agree with him. You might not like his policies, but you ain't going to come on any of the pages I moderate, and I'm just letting everybody know. I don't tolerate disrespect like that. Like, I don't tolerate people, because I have people who will, the page African American for Bernie, for example. There is a couple of guys I've had to ban recently, and they're Bernie supporters, who will post, and I don't care whether they're true about Bill Clinton being a rapist. I don't care. I don't care about all that stuff. If I'm posting stuff on Women for Bernie, for example, you're not going to post vile things about another woman. I may not support Hillary Clinton, but as a woman, I'm taking offense right now to you defiling my page and my postings with these things. So we're here for revolution. Some of your attitude towards her as a woman and towards the women who support her, quite honestly, you should have the same attitude towards women, period. You can't respect us, and I don't understand how you could really be for gender equality the way you're saying you are. People really got to check themselves and really see what they're talking about and what does it mean to be progressive. On the flip side, we have a whole lot of criticism and critique about, oh, well, Bernie's the progressive candidate, and he should be the farthest on this or this, that, and the other, or whatever the case may be. Hold up. Let's not pretend like there isn't a history of issues on the left, just as they're on the right, with racism and prejudice of one kind or another. Like, seriously, the supposed mainstream progressive coalition and the poverty pimps have sold us down the line for a long time. When we look at the Hope 6 projects, which led to the Hope 6 projects with HUD that were under Bill Clinton, that led to the massive reconstruction of public housing as quote unquote mixed income housing that is supposedly, when you read the purpose and intent of the HOPE 6 legislation, it is to better the lives of public housing residents. Tell me, how are you bettering the lives of the masses of public housing residents when you're displacing them?
True.
That doesn't make any sense. So let's just be real. We're talking about the issues we have with progressives. Because it's not just a Bernie Sanders issue. It is absolutely unfair to put it on him.
Let's see if we've gotten this list speaking. Let's hold on. Let me see. Welcome to Down South and Dirty.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, we might have lost.
No, I'm here. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Okay, good. I thought that was you sitting there. All right. And listen to a lot of our conversation here. I'm going to let Stacey go ahead and introduce you, then we'll get into the show.
All right. This is Benjamin Dixon of The Benjamin Dixon Show. He has a web-based show coming out of – where exactly are you coming out of from?
I'm coming from Boston. So even though I have a southern accent, we're in Boston.
Oh, that's okay. I mean, I'm one of those hybrids, you know.
Exactly.
Family from the south, you know, moved up north, and now I'm back down south to just, you know, bring down the whole region, you know. That was the whole plot, you know, to send us back down here. But actually, we connected through Twitter, saw some of his videos, and he is a passionate Bernie supporter. We're kind of like part of an unofficial cabal on Twitter, the Bernie Liberation Army. And one of the things that put me on your radar was your video talking about the whole reparations issue and, you know, the whole, you know, and subsequently we had the disruption of activists at Bernie Sanders.
In Minnesota.
What's your thoughts on that? What's your take on that? Because it's still a little touchy, and we're seeing, you know, from what we saw, we're seeing a decidedly different attitude that or view that's coming out of the white liberal progressive wing and what black Bernie supporters are seeing. What was your take on all of that?
Well, okay, let me sidestep for 1 second and ask about the young woman that just got through speaking. What is her
Anoa.
Name? She was dynamic.
Miss No No ESQ.
Miss No No ESQ. I've got to get all. Actually, I want to get all of you guys on my show because you guys. I'm sitting here yelling at my phone in agreement with what you guys are saying, and I'm like, I'm trying to tweet you to say, let me get in, because I love the conversation you guys just had. You guys were really hitting. Oh no, no problem. That just means I have to get you on my show. So you guys block off some time for me some day this week. I'd like to get all of you at the same time because. I think what people take for granted is that black Bernie supporters exist. It's like, it's like we're some kind of mythical unicorn, as though the only people supporting Bernie Sanders are white. And I think it's a convenient ruse that allows them to forge this narrative that Bernie Sanders has a race problem because don't know black people like him, and only people yelling on Twitter and on social media are the Bernie bros. So... it's just good to hear you guys speak so fervently about the problems, the core problems. Now, circling back to your question on reparations and all the nonsense that's been going on this week, I think it is an asserted effort by the black media elite. We have black political elite and we have the black media elite. It's a concerted effort by them to put the nail in the coffin on the black vote. They are ushering black voters into the hands of Hillary Clinton, not directly. And this is what people think is less of our intellectual prowess. You don't have to expressly endorse Hillary Clinton when she has a 50-point lead in the minority community. You never have to say a positive word about her. All you have to do to support her is distract people from ever hearing or wanting to hear from her competition. And so this reparations conversation, this conversation about a minority problem, this trying to make Hillary Clinton out to be some type of civil rights, you know, woman who's come through so much adversity and can identify with the plight of black women of color and et cetera, et cetera. It's all a part of this push from the black media elite to seal the deal for Hillary Clinton. And so I, through that lens, once you see that, you start dissecting and picking apart all of these little things and all these little games that they play, from reparations down to Minnesota.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it for me, this was more the whole Mr. Coates issue, you know, hit to me reading his article on reparations or you know, blasting Bernie Sanders for his response to the question that was posed to him didn't seem so much that it was an issue of actual policy disagreement. It seemed like you were just mad because you didn't get no love from the Bernie Sanders campaign. And that was my take from reading it. It was like, okay, this is Cornell Sanders Obama, you know, all over again.
Part
and,
two, exactly.
And some of the drama that came up there. And, you know, it was like, you know, I was reading it and I was like, wait a minute, why now? You know, it did feel... It felt like a concerted attack that was coming from all angles because there was quite a few of them that week, and they all backfired, and I consider this one of them. I don't think, you know, and not to say, you know, like Anoah said, there's a presumption, A, that we all follow under, you know, well, so-and-so said this, so, I must think of things in terms of that way, you know, in the terms that's framed by the intellectual class, and I kind of take issue with that whole term. It's, to me, it's very condescending.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, that was the first presumption. And then the underlying theme through the article was like, you know, we believe in magic, you know? Like, you know, a lot of people got caught up in President Obama's election and the historic nature of it. And I think one mistake was that we projected way too much upon the president that was going to be possible, and there were going to be people who were undoubtedly going to be disappointed. I see some of those people who are some of the most fierce critics of President Obama. Not to say I'm not a critic of him from time to time, but, you know, there are some folks who is just mad. So with But there was an expect, you know, it's like they're expecting Bernie Sanders, like we're all expecting to get all of, you know, we all want free stuff, we all want this. We believe, you know, we keep being told in America of possibilities, the America that does great things, and when we see a candidate who's proposing these things, we know he's not capable of them, but it was like, you know, all of a sudden we're just, you know, uneducated, pie in the sky, thinking kind of bimbos, and that's not true. We're looking at the choices of what's in front of us and saying this is the person who's best possible to get us to move a little bit further, not to get us all the way over. But just to get us a little bit further. But did you feel that you know, we were kind of being unfairly characterized as being, you know, too much overt expectations from Bernie?
So I see a lot of what you said. I've seen it nonstop. But more so than just from the black perspective, it's from the expectations of progressives and people who call themselves Democrats in the first place. They, in order to distinguish themselves from Hillary Clinton and Hillary Clinton supporters, they have opted to make standard progressive positions seem like a utopian fantasy. And so they've completely opted against now the single-payer system, a realistic universal health care system. They've opted against any of these $15 an hour minimum wage. I see progressives, so-called progressives, arguing against a $15 minimum wage because Hillary Clinton thinks it should be $12 or $13, right? So that's one of the things that bothers me the most, is that in order to justify support for Hillary Clinton, they've been willing to just eviscerate their progressive beliefs. And that's the number one reason I decided to say, you know what, to hell with this. I'm going to endorse Bernie Sanders because I can't for the life of me believe that I see people who are bearing the name of a progressive or liberal or a Democrat going against the very things that we stood for a very long time before I was even born, and also using conservative techniques. Like, this entire black minority problem of Bernie Sanders, it's a swift vote. It's just like John Kerry in 2004, right? They're doing car roll techniques to attack Bernie Sanders. And my question is, what would they have done if it was Elizabeth Warren? You know, you have to think about it in the sense of this is not a genuine, a reasoned and logical argument against Bernie Sanders. This is political fodder, and they're just rolling in the mud. So that's why I decided to go ahead and endorse Bernie Sanders, because not only on the principle things were they not just flaky, but they just abandoned their principles. But then, two, they just embraced the whole car roll, mudslinging, swift boat technique, and they think that they're doing the right thing. That's the thing that bothers me the most. Now, I want to say one other quick thing about the Black Bernie and the Bernie Bros and the case for reparations and all this. The problem that I see with this entire argument being laid at the feet of Bernie Sanders is that it is so disingenuously never presented to anyone else. And so they erected this straw man to anger Black people against Bernie Sanders, and they're doing this over and over and over again with David Brock with his comment about Bernie Sanders doesn't think Black Lives Matter. Well, that was just a nice little version of their own version of the Southern strategy, trying to make people believe that Bernie Sanders does not care about President Obama and doesn't care about Black people, so that Black people can be that firewall in South Carolina. And I do have one last thing, and then I'm going to shut up and turn it back to you. Here's the problem. In order to justify this, they have to attack anyone who has valid critique or not of President Obama. And what they need you to do, what Hillary Clinton needs Black people to do, is to not be mature enough to have a reasonable dissent or qualm with something President Obama has done. It's very absolutist, so that if you disagree with President Obama on anything, then you're the equivalent of a racist. Well, here's the problem with that. I'm Black. I love President Obama very much, and I will fight to defend his honor and his reputation and his legacy, but I disagree with a few things, quite a few things that he's done, and that does not make me a racist. That does not make me a bad progressive. Actually, I think that makes me a good progressive, and I would rather somebody who has a reasoned disagreement with President Obama than someone like Hillary Clinton, who has a politically convenient love for President Obama.
Right. That's it right there, because it's like, which position, you know, do you love Obama? I mean, do you really love Obamacare when you were backpedaling away from it, along with a lot of Dems, you know, back in 2012, 2014, they were running away from Obamacare. So now, you know, it was kind of funny to hear Hillary Clinton, you know, say that she was, you know, if you like Obamacare, then, you know, you loved Hillary Care because I started it. And it was like, girl, please.
Sit down,
you know, just stop. But, you know, I mean, it's kind of fascinating to watch them try to triangulate themselves with the Obama coalition, which is not as big as they think it is. And I think a lot in the African American community think like you and I, Benjamin, where, you know, for me, I like to use the analogy of my kids, you know.
Uh-huh.
I love my children, right? But sometimes they do stupid things, and I have to chastise them or hold them accountable, which I do, but that doesn't mean I don't love them any less.
Mm-hmm.
And
we haven't seen that. It's actually kind of rather scriptural for all those black people would understand it better from a scriptural context, right? You know, you critique those whom you love. You don't just let people get away with stuff and say you love them. If you really love them, you're going to bring correction to them. And there's some things that about President Obama's term that are very troubling for what he stood for and what he represents. That doesn't mean we don't love him. That means we're just bringing critique to him. I'm sorry for interrupting. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. I mean, that it's a really big problem, you know, doing outreach, community outreach and talking with the people. And, you know, when it gets to President Obama, we have a very, very complex relationship. And I don't think that white progressives, liberals, Democrats, and their allies understand how complex that relationship is. Now, we will get very territorial, attack them, and we will roll deep.
Exactly.
But when it comes for us to do that internally, you know, there are certain issues where we've kept very quiet. And I thought it was very it was kind of fascinating to watch the protesters go against, make the claim about immigration and deportations and that it was really, you know, not just a Latino issue. And I'm sitting back going, but where was the black community on this? Because, you know, I was working immigration a few years ago, and I was stunned at some of the things that I heard out of, you know, civil rights leaders. And the black community is pretty much hung back on the issue of immigration because there hasn't been enough connecting the dots. And so to hear, you know, a demand making made of Bernie, not to say that it wasn't worthy to make in front of any candidate, but to hear it being raised after the community itself being so silent on it, there's been a very small faction of black Americans who have been actually talking about immigration and connecting the dots, because it's not just Latino. It's the whole African diaspora, whether you're of, you know, Caribbean or African, you know, there are the immigration, you know, you could be from a South American country. Immigration does affect black and brown bodies equally. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of funny to hear that being raised at the protest, but it was like, what have you done to get your whole community out? Because it's basically just, you know, those couple of voices. And you know, the rest of the black community was like, well, what are you talking about? You know, it was just a really odd thing to see brought up, you know, and considering the lack of public support around it, because it is seen as a black and brown issue. So did you find this, you know, this whole, you know, line of attacks, it feels kind of disingenuous to you. So, and it felt, you know, definitely disingenuous to me. But is this part of, you know, Scout and all of us, we were talking, I don't know if anybody remembers, there was a cartoon years ago called The Wonder Twins. It ran on ABC. They were part of the Justice League, and part of their superpower was their ability to shape in any shape possible. Did we see, was this a Wonder Twins attack? Because people were just metamorphosing into any kind of things, and it was like, oh, look at you. You know, I mean, every time I got on the internet, it was like, look at you. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that was just stunning to me. It was like Attack of the Wonder Twins last week.
You know what, that whole thing, you guys talked about it, but this is when I was really yelling at the phone, like, amen, and 'cause you guys were killing it. The fact is, the whole thing to me really stunk of opportunism, and I want to say two things. One, you said something about the complexity of our relationship with President Obama, and that a lot of white liberals and progressives don't understand. Right, they don't understand that we can have this reasoned, this principled disagreement with President Obama, but we're not going to let you talk about it. It's like our family, right? We're going to look internally and bring correction to our family, but you sure as hell can't do it. So sit down somewhere. It's the same thing with Black Lives Matter. Like, I support Black Lives Matter, but if we get down to the minutia of it, there's some stuff going on at Black Lives Matter I just ain't got time for, and I'll call it as I see it. I don't know what rating we are. Are we G or PG or R? What's the rating of your show?
We pretty much, we just go for it.
Okay.
Our
show
is like the... Our show is like the porn you keep under the bed.
Okay, I don't like disrespecting somebody's space without being sure I can do it. When I see bullshit, no matter where it comes from, especially if it comes from people that I try to stand in solidarity, you've got to call it out. And what we saw in Minnesota, to me, reeked of bullshit, because it was an opportunity to find another reason to forward this narrative that Bernie Sanders has a problem with black people. Now, let's be real. If you are serious about the immigration crisis, that is facing black and brown bodies. Why in the blue hell are you waiting till now when this has been going on for so, so long? In underneath the presidency of Barack Obama, right? It happened before him, and it's definitely happening with him. And so it's quite disingenuous to make a spectacle out of something that is a legitimate issue when you're not bringing the issue up to the people who have power to actually affect the issue. And so if you're going to bring it and lay it at the feet of Bernie Sanders, you sure as hell need to bring it and lay it at the feet of Barack Obama, of Secretary of Damn State Hillary Clinton, across the board, people who have had hands in this issue. So the whole, and then one last thing, this whole black media, this yellow journalism, people tweeting all terrified and all hurt and butthurt over the possibility that these women were racially profiled without getting any information, that's to me represents kind of the worst of this Black Lives Matter movement, when you don't operate based on fact, you operate based on sensationalization, and that doesn't help your movement. It delegitimizes your movement.
Wow!
Exactly. I'm sitting back here waiting for to get in on this one, because, bro, you hit a point, and Stacey hit a point. Me and Stacey don't talk about this a lot, because one of the things that we don't pay attention to as black people when it comes to our media elite or our elites, political elite, that we know that these cats are fake. They are just as bad as some African despots that we have, like Mugabe and all of them. The white man show up with a little money and say, hey, we need you to speak these words. They speak these words because they want to seem relevant, and they constantly, as you say, they constantly feed us bullshit so that they can continue to stay paid. We see it all the time. All of a sudden, shift, and it's like, whoa, why did you just shift like that? And it's like, oh, you're driving a brand new car. What is going on? All of a sudden, a resolution gets passed in the state legislature to name a street after somebody. Why is that?
We have a lot of situations
we have to pay attention to in our community that folks, like we said, these race hustlers and these pimps who for so long, and the struggle is for real. The struggle is for real, but there are a lot of people taking the struggle and are attempting to make their money off of our struggle, and they are not going to allow it to end, because that's the way they get their end.
Y'all saying so much. See, y'all messing with me. I'm trying to be right on y'all show, but y'all messing with me. Listen, this is what you listen. What you just said. One, they don't always get paid to say something specifically. They get paid to not say something specifically, to really just kind of be quiet. And we saw that with Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks. If he was going to stay at MSNBC, he just could not be there and criticize the establishment, right? And that's the convenient muse that Bernie Sanders presents to a lot of our black political elite, is that they don't have to endorse Hillary Clinton. They don't have to support Hillary Clinton. They can keep their hands clean of Hillary Clinton. All they have to do is attack Bernie Sanders, and that gives them a never-ending stream of content, of outrage, of vitriol, that they can just stay focused like a laser on Bernie Sanders and watch Hillary Clinton just shoot off into the White House unscathed.
Wow.
And the most disheartening all week has been this: the perpetuation of the fallacy of the myth of this great relationship the Clintons have with the black community. Mm. No one can give any concrete examples. It's just this mythology, and you can just go Google it. You can find articles from Melissa Harris Perry from the early mid-2000s. I mean, Michelle Alexander just had a post that went viral eviscerating black support for the Clintons. So I had to check people on the flip side, too. Like, okay, that don't mean that she's endorsing Bernie, though. You know, we still have work to do on our side, too. But at the same time, we need to have an intelligent conversation about this. And many of us are capable of that, but we're letting emotion get in the way. And it's a problem.
Well, I'm going to tell you what Clinton and Hillary Clinton did for black people. One, Bill can play a mean ass saxophone. The man has rhythm. Okay. What's your name? That is it. All of the only thing that the Clintons have done, they can emulate. Our nuance.
But wait a minute, that's supposed to get y'all Negroes. Y'all are supposed to fall for that. Y'all are not, see, you're not getting with the program. What we're seeing is like a collective freak out between the media, those who don't understand who the establishment is. Those of y'all who are sitting around with your face looking like you sucked on a bag of lemons because of the Bernie Sanders campaign, you're probably, if your face looks like that, you're one of the establishment. This freak out that we're seeing going on is kind of stunning to watch because we're not getting with the program, and it's like, what's wrong with you black people? And it's like, we're awake. We know what's going on uptown, and so, you know, it's even hard. I can't even make an argument. I couldn't make one for the Clintons in terms of African-American community. There's not one to make because their whole campaign is based on my bad. Everything that they're pledging to fix is the things that they brought to us and broke. So if you didn't get it the first time, I'm going to give you another go-round.
And they say it's not fair to use him against her, right? Well, that's just her spouse. One, she loves to tell her record as first lady, and if your first lady experience counts for Chip, it accounts for everything else under the spectrum. Two, she's already said numerous times that he will be one of her advisors. No, ma'am. I'm good on that. I don't need your husband advising you. We don't need a repeat of what happened before. So it's people just need to look up the information. It's out there. It's not hidden anywhere. It's very plain as day. And we have all these newfangled folks writing as if it's, you know, why would you say that? It's clear. It's documented. Where y'all been at?
But there's an article. It's a line that came out today or yesterday that I posted up on my Facebook page that is talking about the Clintons and their history with African Americans. And how we go back talking about Super Soldier, Ricky Ray Rector. Yes. We can talk about the welfare reform, the crime bill. We can go back talking about how he personally went after Jesse Jackson and talking about this is not the Rainbow Push Coalition. And then we go back in there and we put in how Hillary and made statements during her time that has actually been kind of like a what the hell moment when you sit there and listen or read the statement of how she's generalized, you know, between gangs, animals, good Southern white folk. They are good Southern white, good Dickrats. And what we've done is that we keep going into this narrative. One of the things that we have to recognize, the same Negroes who are backing Hillary Clinton now were the same Negroes who backed her back in 2008. They thought that was an inevitability. Then when Barack Obama became the man, then they all, because of the same thing Mr. Dixon is talking about, they kept their hands clean because there's certain things they just didn't speak on. They was able to come in and say, hey, we down for Brother Barack. But guess what? You actually wasn't down for Brother Barack. You was never down for Brother Barack. You didn't give Brother Barack, particularly people in the Congress, you didn't give Brother Barack no help. Because you didn't push hard enough to get Democrats elected. You helped us lose the House because you sat still. But, you know, and I still say it was a conspiracy. And if anybody's ever read the book Gang Change and looked at the background of the 2008 race, you knew Hillary was going to come back and that she worked very hard to try to make sure that this thing was going to be as inevitable as possible. She worked, I don't know what kind of deal got cut between her and the Warren camp because I don't know what deal happened, but Elizabeth is going to come out the box on her sooner or later because she's tracking because Nancy Pelosi can't keep her mouth closed. They're going to make
you. Yeah.
I'm a party guy, and I'm pissed off because I'm sitting here watching Democrats on a regular basis sitting there not listening to the people. Stacey knows she'll heard me say this a million times. Let's break down the word Democrat to its root word. The word demos means people.
Right.
But we've seen our party sitting seems to want to be dictators in the fact that they're so damn smart and elitist that they can tell us what to do. We just dumb poor people. No, we're not. We understand what is going on because we're living it every day in the streets. We understand the economy better than you think we do. We understand foreign policy better than you think we do because everything that happens in the hood just happens the same way on the global stage, just in a larger way. You know what I'm saying? We understand diplomacy. Hell, if you live in the hood and you ain't dead, you understand diplomacy.
Well, it's kind of hard.
So,
well, it's kind of hard for
Go ahead.
Well, for the party to make the argument, particularly for me as a black woman, to say that you're fighting to protect my vote. Okay, as an African-American woman, you're out there fighting to protect the vote, and you're fighting for my choice, right, and reproductive areas. But my choice as just a woman, regardless whether it's reproductive rights or not, and to see how the party is operating and subverting democracy within their own ranks, it is heartbreaking. And it makes it very difficult for me or anybody else to sell your party on why you are the best one for particularly black community. It makes it very difficult to make the argument. This is the party that would best represent your community because what it's saying to its people is, or its voters, and I am 52. I have voted Democratic just about all of my life, not because I wanted to, but because I had lack of a better option. But I've reached that point where I'm tired of it. But it is very, very hard for me as a community activist to go out and tell people, just vote blue. You know, when you see all of this going on, and it's like, what in the hell are they doing up there? You know, you're not listening to the people that you need to vote. You're doing everything that you're accused of, you know, when they say they only come to you every 4 years or, you know, when they need you for an election, and then they holler on all 4 years. No, they're not, but then we don't hear from you, and then you pop up, and then you pop up with this stunning pieces of bullshit. I mean, it is just, it's really, really hard to look at the party that way. And Benjamin, can you hang on for a little bit? Because our show today is about the Iowa caucus, and we were going to talk a little bit about that. And Scott, are we on extra innings this show, or we're going to 3:30?
You got 2 minutes this show. I didn't take it to extra innings this show. I didn't think it was going to – I wasn't planning on us to get this deep, so I would put a 90-minute show in today. So,
well, it's
– you know,
I mean, this is fine.
But you know,
but, well, I guess
that,
we should give them a little bit of what we did, even though the conversation is great, and we'll probably double back to it.
It ties in very well into Iowa because, you know, Iowa, we're talking a lot about the African-American vote and this, that, and the other, but the African-American vote doesn't come majorly into play until we get to South Carolina. That is going to be the first state in which we see the African-American vote come into play. But the African-American vote can be very well much swayed by what happens tomorrow in Iowa because a lot of black people are sitting on the fence. They're not really supporting Hillary, but they're waiting to see how well Bernie can do in Iowa. If he can beat her amongst the white folk, folks may say, okay, he can win, I can get in there. And we know we have fence setters. We know this happens. You know, it's just like watching sports. You have some people ain't going to bet on the team until they see how the first round of the playoffs go. You know, they fooling with their brackets, and it's really not all the way filled out because they don't know how this team is going to do versus this team. Well, tomorrow we're going to find out. Because Iowa, as we all know, is the first, you know, contest in the United States under our presidential primary system. And Iowa's a little bit different than a lot of places because you actually see in their process of picking who the nominee will be for Iowa being very much more Democratic than you see it in anywhere else because they still come into a room together. And it's not you go in, stand in line, and, you know, for an hour in some places, and you go in there and spend 5 minutes at the, you know, in the ballot box, and you go in there, you press your buttons or you pull your lever, however you do in your state, and then you walk out. In Iowa, they going to be coming in at 6:30 in the evening. They're coming in at 6:30 evening. This is not like here in Georgia where we start voting. There's no early voting. There's no none of that. This is, you have to show up in place at 6:30, okay? They're going to show up at 6:30, and people are going to automatically go to corners of the room that are blocked off for their candidate. So you're walking in the room automatically expressing who you down for, which in a lot of American politics, particularly down south, that would be scary for us because we're very, very secretive about who we support in some time just because how it's going to affect us socially. So they go in the room, they're going to, you know, indicate their support for a particular candidate. Well, for 30 minutes, they're going to sit there and there's going to be conversations going on. So if you got somebody who is a hype man, you're going to put that hype man out on the floor. They're going to go out there, that hype man is going to try to pull in because there's going to be some people that's going to go to an undecided corner. And people are going to be over there trying to get those folks to come on. So this is where, you know, like Noah said, you got folks out there trying to sell Bernie or sell whoever. You got to be on your point and have nobody to talk to folks. So then those folks is going, you know, people are going to come through. And after those 30 minutes, they're going to stop for a second. They're going to take and count the candidates. And then it's going to be like, okay, this person got this many people, this person got this many people, and whoever doesn't hit a certain mark, which I think is like 15%, if you don't get 15% of that vote, you are out. So then you get ready to go into the second round, and there's 30 minutes for everybody to realign, and you go through the grandstanding and soapboxing again for a whole another 30 minutes. And since we only have three, we only have three really viable candidates anymore, we can count the O'Malley is going to go out in the first round, and the second round is going to be about who the undecideds and the O'Malley folks are going to go with.
Right, and that's actually, O'Malley's in a really good position to affect the outcome, because who his people goes with may mean the difference whether Hillary or Bernie wins the caucuses. So,
right. And so from a standpoint of field operation, you know, in Iowa, what they do, you know, here in Georgia, when we're making phone calls, we look for the, you know, likely voters. They call them likely caucusers because, again, you have to be very politically active to want to get up and go out somewhere at night in the wintertime and go spend a couple of hours there. Anybody that's ever been to a Democratic Party caucus, when we pick our delegates here in Georgia and you live in the metro, you know how long it takes to go through that process. You know, I think in 2012, up here in Fulton County, that they spent maybe 5 or 6 hours in there just picking out delegates. So you got to think about it. That was a caucus. So if you're from Georgia and you've ever participated in the delegate selection caucus, it is somewhat similar to that. But the Iowa thing is a lot more complex and a lot more efficient than what we do. So after that, they're going to do that, and then once they get through and counted all their votes, each precinct will then give their delegates a portion at a county convention. So there's a lot of different levels in the Iowa thing, and if for us who are used to just going to ballot boxes and doing this, it's strange because in actuality, this is only how it's done with the Democrats. The Republicans in Iowa do it completely different. And I'm not going to go into that because I can really care what they're going to do in the Republican caucus. As long, you know, because my whole idea is to beat whoever it is they send out that room. So, I mean, but if they say it's a different process of how they do it for the Republicans. So, I mean, we are hoping tomorrow night that the Bernie folks get, because the more people that they can get in the room for them, and the offset is going to be better. So it's about getting their people out, and we're hoping that the ground game strategy and the phone calls that they're doing in Iowa is going to help push Bernie over.
And a ground game in Iowa matters. That is, you know, there's a term called the full Grassley, named for a former Senator Chuck Grassley, who he visited, I believe, all of the counties in Iowa. You know, the more people you get out and you see, and because that's how Iowa voters work. They like to see you out there. Well, I would say not just Iowa, but most voters. I think all elections should be run that way, where you try to see and meet as many of the actual people in a particular state. But there's a big push, you know, for you're going to see all the candidates try to make as many events, and they're going to be, I hope they have Pepto-Bismol with them, because they're going to be eating a lot of strange foods, or, you know, just having a bite here. But it's basically, it's like community organizing, and it's very fascinating to watch. So there's going to be a lot of events going to by the different candidates. They're going to be making their final pitches to the voters. And are they still going to do – does anybody know anything about the town hall? Are they still doing that? I know it was questionable whether they were going to, you know, it was up in the air. And then,
but this other debate?
But he's not going to, you know, Sanders, and that was the kind of a thing that kind of upset me, and I was, you know, we didn't touch on it a little bit, and how there was all of a sudden, you know, a unsanctioned debate, you know, scheduled, and Clinton automatically says, well, I'll go, knowing damn well that O'Malley and Sanders are not.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that, because that was kind of something that happened. Let's talk about that.
Well, the campaign issued a challenge. They issued a challenge and said, we'll do it if we get these four other debates. And one of them is in Brooklyn. And all of a sudden, I think it was yesterday, the Clinton campaign, they agreed to do the one, I think it's in California. They refused to do the one in Brooklyn, and they want to do one in Flint, Michigan. Like, she wants to do a debate in Flint,
Michigan.
Wait a
minute. She doesn't want to do Brooklyn? Come on now. That's supposed to be your home base.
Well, you know, I mean, Bernie done turned up in Brooklyn a couple of times, so I don't think they would.
I really don't think they want a piece of Brooklyn, but I find it fascinating. I was born in Brooklyn, so, you know,
There was the complaining and stuff on social media about if he was really serious, I mean, now what is this? You know, there are another debate is on the table and he doesn't want it. Come on now, we're not stupid. We're not stupid. We see how the machine operates. Why? And everyone's like, well, if all three of them agree to an unsanctioned debate, then the DNC has to sanction it. I don't trust Debbie Wasserman Schultz no farther than I can. Like,
that she was not going to agree to sanction that debate. And she had said if all three of them would have sanctioned it, then it might have went down. But she made a point of saying that she wouldn't sanction it. And if Sanders would have went ahead and did it, then they would have took him out and unqualified him for the rest of them. And it would have been the Hillary show from here on out.
And as far as that, because we already have issues with the order and the way they ask questions and stuff anyway, but yeah, exactly.
Well, to me, it's kind of like, you know, now, you know, after all these months, we want debates. No, you can't have them.
Right.
Can we have debates? No, you can't have them. Now, all of a sudden, when you're saying, yeah, you know what, we kind of messed up with that. Now everybody's supposed to jump when you decide you want a debate. No, no, no. We're good. You said go with six. We'll go with six. Now you deal with it. You know, I applaud the Sanders campaign for not, you know, being led to jump through those hoops, that they're now deciding, you know, this was your strategy, you wanted to go with it, fall on your sword, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, all of this back and forth, well, we're going to do a debate here and we're not going to do this one, you know, and if you can't do it in your own hometown, or your own home base, you know, you are the senator from New York. You've got your campaign offices in Brooklyn. Your husband set up in Harlem when he left the presidency. So this is supposed to be your turf. So, you know,
You can't get no support. You know, it's just crazy.
You can't get no love from the hood. You know, I thought you had all this. You know, I thought you had that. So, you know, I'm kind of curious about that. But, you know, I just didn't like the whole, oh, now, you know, it was kind of like, well, now we decided we want to do this now. And it's like, yeah, well, we've moved on. We're busy. We're trying to get voters out. And I suggest you do the same thing. You know, it just seemed like they were jerking their chains. What about the Microsoft thing? Because I downloaded the app. For the caucuses, there was some complaints that Microsoft is providing this app for reporting on the Iowa caucuses, and the Bernie campaign was a little bit upset about that. What do you guys think?
That's news for me. Tell me more about that one.
Yeah, there is a app that is being used to tabulate the caucuses, and Microsoft has provided it for free to both Democrats and Republicans to help on their reporting. And the Bernie campaign came out, and they were definitely against it. They don't feel that Microsoft is going to be objective, and, you know, you're dealing with data, and it is – they just question their role in the caucusing, and they're kind of suspicious. Rightfully so, because, you know, now we're seeing – you know, there's a saying, hit dog holler. We're seeing hit dogs hollering, you know, from the media. You know, we saw it, you know, with some in the media, and now, you know, these corporate interests that are stepping up and saying, you know, Bernie Sanders, hey, y'all need to just tone it down, you know. It's like, you know, having kids, you know. You let them play with something, you think they're going to tie themselves out, and then they'll eventually come your way. Well, we ain't tired of it, and we surely are not going to put it down and get distracted by something else, and they really don't know how to deal with that. So, I mean, I think they do have some sort of they have reason to be reticent about using it. It is up. I believe it's still up. I have Android, so I believe it is up on Google Play. It is, you know, Microsoft says they're proud to be working on it, but there's nothing to worry about. But, you know, I get worried when I'm talking on the phone with someone, and then I look on Facebook and I see these apps that deal with things I'm talking on the phone about. Yeah, there might be a little reason to have a problem with, whether it's Google or Facebook, anyone who's dealing with massive amounts of data. And, you know, these apps have a lot of data. There is reason to be suspect. And there, I'm looking at an article in Time. They have tested the system.
And then go Google something right down the middle of the debate, and the first thing that tops your Google search as you start typing is the thing that you were talking about. So now I don't trust it either.
Right. You know, I mean, I'll be on the phone with somebody, and all of a sudden I see these Google ads pop up, you know, and it's like it gets a little freaky sometimes. I also get tempted to want to, like, say some really crazy off-the-wall shit to see what it pulls up. But, you know, I don't want to – look, there's probably some black Suburbans in my neighborhood anyway. I don't want to bring any more on. So we'll just leave it at that. But I just thought that was kind of interesting, you know, in terms of the Iowa caucus and, you know, can we trust the data that comes out? So – but this is really going to be an interesting process. I'm really hoping to see Bernie do strong in Iowa. This would be really good coming into South Carolina. And then, you know, Georgia is one of the states. We're all based in Georgia. So Georgia is one of those March 1st primary states. On a side note, if y'all don't register by tomorrow to vote, you cannot vote in the primaries. Tired of telling y'all.
And also,
tired of asking y'all. If you moved or changed your, if you moved to another county and changed your name, you must re-register. So So
and also,
get it done, people.
Early voting starts February 8th here in Georgia. February 8th. So we got a lot of work to do over the next month. Just some quick poll numbers. I just pulled up Real Clear Politics poll numbers, and I've always liked them because they are composite. They have Hillary at 47.3 and Bernie at 44 even and O'Malley at 4.4. So as we were speaking earlier about O'Malley's positioning, you can shake that up. But being that we're talking about the caucus being a very personal thing and people get caught onto contagious energy. So if you're in Iowa and you are a Bernie caucuser, I need you to go in those rooms and those gyms and those churches and libraries, and I need you to turn it up. Turn it up positive. Put off all the energy so when the first vote comes through and it looks close, and some of them Hillary folks that was over there just because they thought she could win, look at that. They can switch sides, too. Steal their asses. Because all we need is to get more than she gets. That's it. So we need. So I need you folks in Iowa. I need y'all to be turned up when y'all going in there. But so it's, and the thing, great thing about that is that if you look back at the data over time, and I was just looking at that, just 6 months ago, you had Hillary polling well over 50% in Iowa, and Bernie was under 30.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
you look at that. Him being at 44% now speaks a lot to how this campaign has momentum. I mean,
started from the bottom, now we're here. This is going to be interesting.
So if you got your phone banking right now, anybody that's doing virtual dialers, I've been doing a little virtual dialing here lately. I know they've been doing a little redirect toward Iowa here lately. So if you get on and you get some of them Iowa calls, make sure you're strong. You know, make sure you give them the right information so we can get those folks to where we need them to go on tomorrow. And let's hope when also if you are of a Down South and Dirty thing, we will be live tweeting the results and things going on the new DSD Twitter, which is at DSD Radio. So find that on Twitter, follow it. You know, because we'll be putting it down hard like we always do when we live tweeting, because you know we're bound to. We're going to find the foolishness. We're going to find the good stuff. We're going to be retweeting it and commenting on it. So, I mean, just everybody keep their eyes out for that. And realize that next month is Black History Month. And like I said, we're going to be doing some very interesting topics.
Yes, Benjamin, you got to come back for some of those shows because we're going to get a little stupid on them.
We're going to talk about some history, her story. We're going to be doing it, you know, because we're not talking about George Washington Carver. We're not be talking about all of that stuff. Ain't no Harriet Tubman in none of this. We're talking about some real deal, holy field, get down and dirty like we do history and talk about some of the things that affect our history and our present that we don't necessarily look at. And I'm going to give y'all a quick preview of one of the things I'm going to want to talk about, and this is news to Stacey. But I'm going to do a show about the similarities to the Reconstruction era and now. And so y'all going to be like, what? Think about that.
Oh, do you know about Reconstruction? Because Hillary Clinton surely doesn't. So she might know.
The Reconstruction era.
Well, see, she can listen in.
So, yeah.
She
Hillary,
can tune in.
Something real about Black folks, because we're going to talk about it in February.
Because she clearly confused. You got to give Coach credit because he did write an article about her baffling moment babbling about Abraham Lincoln and Reconstruction. She clearly knows very little to nothing about history and what Reconstruction was really all about. There's actually a positive thing for anyone listening.
Because she never pays attention to what's going on in the region. The world keeps screwing up. Okay, we got less than 60 seconds left in the show, and I want to thank everybody. I want to thank you, Mr. Dixon, for coming on our show. We definitely will take you up on the offer to come on your show and chop it up with you.
Sounds good.
Please, if you're in Georgia, You can register online on your phone. That's the My Voter app. So if you can do register to vote before the end of the day tomorrow, because we need everybody in Georgia on deck for the SEC primary. There's also special elections February 16th for House District 58 in the city of Atlanta. Go out, vote Park Cannon. Yes, this is not a nonprofit, not none of that, so I can endorse whoever the hell I want to, and I say vote
go
Park Cannon.
Woo!
And this is down south and dirty, and we are out.
Peace.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.